I'm Jenna.
And I'm Stephanie.
And you are listening to Pastors' Wives Tell All,
a podcast by pastors' wives for church leaders and anyone desiring to take a peek inside our glass house.
We are breaking down walls and crushing pastors' wives' stereotypes within the church.
We want pastors' wives and other ministry leaders to know that they are not alone in this. Plus, this is basically therapy for the three of us with a whole lot of dance parties. Woo, 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 woo. Hey friends, welcome back to Pastors' Wives Tell All. Today, we have the privilege of chatting with podcaster, author, speaker, mom to four, and worship pastor's wife, Jamie Ivey. Since 2014, when Jamie launched her podcast, The Happy Hour with Jamie Ivey, she has been elevating the stories of women and men chasing hard after Jesus. She believes that stories change the world, and that belief has been her motivation as she has fostered a community of listeners who are eager to hear from others with different life experiences or unique perspectives. Jamie has fought against the lie that everyone else has it together, and she is lacking or falling behind. The truth is, none of us do. Only in looking to Jesus and the life He lived perfectly can we find true freedom from the unrealistic expectations we put on ourselves. In this episode, we discuss the unrealistic expectations church leaders, pastors' wives, and women in general face that deter us from walking in holiness rather than a facade of perfection. These masks we wear and the unrealistic expectations we are trapped by lead only to disappointment, narcissism, and loneliness. We cannot wait for you to hear all of the wisdom packed into this episode. So let's get to this important conversation.
Hey, Jamie. We are pumped to have you here with us. Yes. It's like we're all sitting together. I just saw you take a drink of coffee and we have,
cheers.
Well, one of us has coffee. One of us needs coffee and doesn't have coffee. I'll get it later. It's fine. But we are just so excited to have you. I have been following along with you for several years now. You're actually the first podcast I found.
Aww.
And started listening to. And I was like, oh, I think I like this. I like podcasts.
I love it. I love it. Well, thank you for being an OG listener. That makes me very happy.
Yes. I even went back and listened to your very first episode. So there's that.
Oh, gosh. That's tragic.
No, I still loved them. You were like, you're so good at what you do. I'm like, she should just be on regular radio, which I know you've talked about that.
Yeah.
And you love being like, you would love to be a radio personality. I feel like you would be great. Or on a show, a TV show.
Yeah.
That'd be my dream job right there.
Yes.
I'm a little too old for that, but that would have been my dream job.
You're like, never too old.
Oh, thanks. Mm-hmm. Or like a sports person down on the field.
Yes.
Yeah. Aaron Andrews. That would be
so fun.
Yeah. Yes. But I love being here with you guys today.
Yes.
We are ready to jump in. But first, if there is somebody who has been living under a rock and doesn't know who you are, could you please, and I'm just kidding, listeners, don't get offended. It's fine. You are great. Mm-hmm. Could you just tell them who you are, maybe a little bit about your family and just how you came to know Jesus?
Yeah. Okay. So Jamie Ivey, that's who I am. I live in Austin, Texas, with my husband and four kids and two dogs. And we've lived in Austin since 2008. So we've been here for quite a while. And we moved here for my husband to start working at the Austin Stone Community Church, which has been our church family for the past 15 years. Four kids at this moment, they are 19, 18, 18, and 16. Mm. And so we have one in college, two seniors, and a sophomore.
Can we come and ask you about how to raise a teenager in like 2 seconds? Because
the two of us are starting it
hormones.
Out. We have 13-year-olds and it's a lot.
I'm not ready.
It's all a lot, you guys. It's all a lot. And I podcast and write books and speak to women. And it's just the greatest unexpected gift that God could have given me. Like you said, I started my podcast in 2014, literally with like, I don't know what I'm doing. How about I just sit and talk to a friend and see what happens? And I look back and I'm super grateful that I just took that leap, which mm-hmm. is, I always say, a little unlike me, that I'm surprised at myself and proud of myself at the same time. So I've been podcasting since then. It's been just the best job I could ever imagine. You guys probably would agree. And mm-hmm. it's opened up a lot of doors for me. And so write books, speak to women, and What else? I like to walk. I like to go on walks. Yes. That's like my favorite thing. I love listening to podcasts. I love reading. I love eating. All of the things. And that's what I do.
I love it.
Oh, you asked me how I knew Jesus.
Yes, 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 yes.
So the short end of that is that I grew up in a family that went to church my whole life. Like, I've always been in church. Made a profession of faith at, I think, probably third grade. Would have said I was a follower of Jesus. But really, my life just didn't really look like anyone who followed Jesus. And I'm not talking about like, oh, I occasionally gossiped. I just was not truly allowing God to be Lord. I wasn't following him. I didn't really care. And so I kind of had some bumps along the way and ended up getting pregnant in college and moving home to live with my parents. And then I went to Passion, which is a conference for college kids, which I highly recommend. Mm-hmm. Yes. And really met Jesus for the first time in a new way. And so I was 21, started following Jesus at 21. And so I have been trying to look and act and talk more like him for the past, let's see, 23 years. Yes.
No.
Wow. I read your book, If You Only Knew, and I remember like reading your testimony. And as someone who grew up with a lot of legalism surrounding her, I just remember thinking like, wow, she's just sharing real things. And I think that's even the heart behind what we do is we want people to see what's real and not see that facade.
Yeah.
And I remember feeling like freedom even reading your book, just so you know.
That's what I would want you to feel. So I'm glad that you did.
And so now I open up, like if I'm struggling with something, these two, they know about it. Yeah. Like if there's a sin, if there's something and I'm like, guys, I have to just say this. Like, let me tell you what I've been struggling with. Mm-hmm. And there's such freedom in that. And I think part of that was reading books like yours, and there's a few others that really made an impact on me, obviously, along with the word of God. Like, he's totally changing me every day.
Yeah.
But yes, I just thank you for doing that and for being who you are.
Thanks for saying that. And you said something really important that I always like to say when I talk about vulnerability. And I do write in my book pretty authentically and share things that would maybe be hard for others, but anything I've shared in a book has been worked out within my community. And so I love that you shared that you just talked to these friends about what you're struggling with, because I write things in a book, and this new book has some things that are pretty vulnerable in it, but all those have been worked out with real people that I sit across from, that I touch, that I hug, that we do life together. And so I never want people to think like vulnerability means going on a podcast or standing on stage or writing a book. God's just gifted us and put us in these positions to be able to share. But that happens in personal relationships every single day of your life. And so thanks for sharing that, Stephanie.
Exactly. So Jamie, you know, you did share that you and your husband have been at your church for 15 years. Tell us a little backstory. Has your husband been in ministry since y'all been married? Tell us a little bit about that and just kind of the process of how it is behind the scenes and what got y'all into ministry.
So we have been in ministry since the day we met. And so the funny thing about Aaron and I meeting is I told you I got saved when I was 21. Well, when I moved back home because of that pregnancy in college, which I had a miscarriage, I moved back home and I moved back home and my parents had started attending a new church. And at this new church, there was a guy there named Aaron Ivey who was, he sang some and he also like did students. And my brother was a high school kid. And so I knew who he was. We became friends. If he were here, his side of the story would be like, I saw her and I wanted her and I thought she was hot. And I was like, babe, I'm glad you stayed away because I was a hot mess. You didn't love Jesus. And I was just at church for all the wrong reasons. Yeah. And so we were friends for a while. And then I became a Christian. And then we literally started dating a year later. And so he was already in ministry. That was never... I'm not a girl who was like, I'm going to marry a pastor. Like I was just now following Jesus. Like I was like, y'all, I'm fresh off of like this strain of like a lot of like a lot of bad things in my life. And so, Stephanie, if you read my book, I talk about this a lot, my first book, I really struggled with what it meant to be married to someone in ministry, because how could someone like me be married to someone in ministry? So we've been in ministry. So we lived there for a handful, just maybe 1 or 2 years. And then we moved to Nashville, and Aaron did full-time traveling with his band. Oh. And so that was ministry for sure, but we were not at a local church. He was at a different church playing every weekend. It was a great time in our lives. I look back and I think towards the end, we were really yearning for a local community, a local body. We had a church that we went to, but Aaron was always out of town on Sundays. And so I was going by myself with kids, and that's just a lonely place to be. Yeah. I know that's a lot of people's reality. Yes. And so it is what it is. But it was still a lonely place. Anyhow, that led us to move to Austin to work at the Austin Stone. And when we first moved here, Aaron was not on full-time staff. He was still traveling full-time with his band. And just over the years, it's just changed and changed and changed. And from him being a worship leader to being in charge of the worship leaders to becoming an elder to being, you know, now his title, I think, is pastor of worship and creativity. I think I said it right, you guys.
Yeah.
And he preaches a lot and leads worship. And so we've just been through a lot of changes here, and all along I've been a pastor's wife. That is a very odd title for me. I have never really enjoyed it or loved it. And so I'm like, we could talk about all kinds of stuff, but it's a thing that's kind of like, I don't know what that means for me, you know?
Well, yeah, I think that's the great thing about like why we wanted you on this podcast, because there's so many women that reach out to us daily. They're like, I never asked for this, and nor do I feel like I am worthy for this. And of course we all have our own callings like outside of that. But I am going to throw in another question for you. There are so many women listening that just like resonated with what you said. So tell them a little bit more, like, how do you kind of find your place when it's not something that you feel, this is me, a pastor's wife, a worship pastor's wife? Like, how do you step into working alongside of him in the church? Or do you, or are you always gone? How does that work for you?
It's interesting because we had someone, Aaron and I just recorded a podcast from my podcast that by the time you guys are listening would have already aired. But someone asked us, how do you support each other in your ministries? And I really feel a certain way about this. And the way I feel about it is, if my husband worked at Dell, which is, you know what Dell is, but there's a big plant here in Austin. If my husband worked at Dell, would I be a Dell administrator's wife? That is so true. You know what I mean?
Good point.
Yes. Like, would I walk into a room and they'd be like, ah, oh, there's the VP of whatever's wife. Yeah. Would people ask me, how do I support him well as a Dell executive? And I never want to belittle the office of person in ministry. Scripture is very clear. It is important. It is valid. And it deserves a lot of respect. And it deserves a lot of accountability. All the things. I also think we live in a culture, and I would be interested, I don't know the answer to this, I'd be interested to go back and look at the last 500 years and see what it's been like for people in ministry and their families. Like, that would be an interesting study for me. But I think we live in a culture that's really elevated certain offices within the church. And then because of certain offices being elevated, we brought everybody in their family up to that same level, you know? And so I think it's done an injustice towards women who are married to someone who works at a church. And I think there's a lot of accountability for that within the church body, within the pastors. I think the pastors need to have conversations about this, within the way that other women see each other. And so that's a long answer to say, I know I didn't ever see myself this way. And now I forgot your question, Jessica.
It's okay. It's okay.
But I have never seen myself this way. And also, I'll go back. I think your question was, I've always had things that I've done outside of the church. And so I've never viewed my role and my calling as, here's God put me on earth to 100% support Aaron in everything he does. Now, I'm not belittling anybody whose calling that is. And if that's your calling, run with it and do it to the best of your ability.
But it's not everybody's.
Right.
But if it's not, don't feel that you have to because you're married to a pastor. I think that's my big thing, is like, find what you're meant to do. Our entire marriage, I have volunteered places. When I wasn't working full time, I was volunteering at Reagan High School with teen moms. I was volunteering here. I was volunteering at the jail. I had things that I did that didn't overlap with Aaron, and sometimes weren't even a part of our church. Right. You know, like I'm doing things outside of our church. And now obviously our life looks very different. I work full time and travel and speak and do all the things. But I just think that the disservice towards a lot of women is this idea that because your husband's a pastor, here's what you have to do. Now, there's a lot of caveats there. I go to a mega church.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
There are a lot of small churches that it is just works best for the husband and wife to serve together. Right. I have opinions about women doing jobs that they're not getting paid for at churches. you know what I mean? Like,
you should tell us more.
I mean, I just think a lot of churches try to get away with like, well, we'll just have the wife of this person do this job that is right. like a yeah. job, but then yeah. they're not going to pay her. So that's a conversation for another day, you guys.
No, oh, it's an ongoing conversation.
It's what we conversate with pastor wives every single day about. No, so, and you answered great. That was, yes, it was good.
You did.
So good.
So Jamie, you mentioned you obviously are a podcaster and author. When did you feel the call to step out to do your own ministry things? Mm-hmm. And do you ever get overwhelmed by just, you know, balancing all of these mm-hmm. things?
Yeah, every day of my life.
Because it's a lot.
It's a lot. It's a lot.
Amen.
I will say this. Not everyone who's listening and who's a pastor's wife is a mom. That is a thing we should say as well.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I do think as being a mom, the stages of my children's life has affected me in more ways than we could count. Mm. And what I mean by that is I don't feel as overwhelmed anymore of how do I handle all the kids' things plus Aaron's things plus my things.
Yeah.
My kids are on their way out, like one's in college, two are seniors. Like, I'm not driving anybody anywhere. Like, you know, yeah. I know you cannot even imagine. They all have driver's license. They all have cars. They can take care of themselves. I'm not packing lunches. It's just a different yeah. world. And so I want to preface with that. But when my kids were younger and I was starting working, and Aaron has a busy commitment level as well, there were a lot of times that I felt overwhelmed. And I think the things that worked in my favor is I'm very thankful for the husband that I have, and we've grown mm-hmm. a lot in this. I'll tell you about one of the biggest fights we ever got in, if you're interested, but we've grown a lot.
We tell all here.
We tell all.
Pastor Webb tell all. But he's been really helpful with that, of understanding, hey, I have this career and I have this thing that I want to do. And so, yes, I've been overwhelmed. There's definitely been seasons of that. And I think that some of the things I've had to do is kind of – there have been lots of times where I've had to look at what's on my plate and say, okay, what can I – there's this example. I'm sure – who knows whoever said this. It's been around the world. But about juggling plastic versus glass balls. Like I was a juggler.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Which I was a kinesiology major in college. And one of my classes, we had to learn how to juggle. I don't know how to juggle now. But
that is hilarious.
Maybe I learned.
That is so random.
I was
random.
Fixing to ask you. I need you to juggle for
I'm
us.
Impressed.
I do not know how to, but apparently I did it one class. But if I was juggling balls and some of them were plastic and some of them were glass, there's mm-hmm. some – the glass balls, I can't let them drop. They will break. They will shatter.
Yeah.
But there are some plastic balls that – I got to let them drop and they're not going to break. And so I can pick them up another time. You know, I can do that again another time. Mm. I think for me, the biggest growth has learning to differentiate which balls are glass and which balls are plastic.
Mm. Yeah.
And
it's
so hard. Mm-hmm. And sometimes you drop a glass ball and by the grace of God, this is an analogy. God puts it back together. You pick it up and you keep going.
Yeah.
But you learn that and you learn, okay, I can't drop this anymore. And when the kids were little, the life I have now, I could not have lived with smaller kids.
Yeah.
Some people do it. I could not have done it. Yeah. And so I think one of my biggest probably encouragements too, to women that are listening that feel like I have this thing burning inside of me. I mean, my first thing is like, man, listen to it. Like mm-hmm. lean in, talk to your spouse about it. What does your husband say? Lean into that. Mm-hmm. And my next advice is it possible now? Mm-hmm. And if it's not, it's okay. You know, like we live in a culture that says today, 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 today. And I just think, what if we were more like today, I got to take care of these glass balls, knowing that these mm-hmm. plastic balls are going to be there and I'll pick them up in 2 years.
Yeah.
I just think that that's hard, you know, and mm-hmm. it's easy for me to say sitting here on this side, but it is an encouragement to kind of figure out what's important to you right now.
That's actually very freeing.
Yeah.
Because our kids are a little bit younger and we're doing this thing and it blew up. We thought our moms would listen And then one day it was more than our moms. And we were like, what is happening? Because of a stupid, silly reel. Because we like to be like teen girls dancing around and making people laugh. Or like, oh, maybe someone will smile today. And then we were like, oh, what did you just do, Lord? What do we even do with this? Take it back.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
And sometimes I like two of us specifically, well, probably all three of us have had a very rough, I will say, this past week. And some things had to be put down. Mm-hmm. And I think sometimes I think are like, Lord, are we not doing well? Are we not doing what you've called us to? And I know that there's spiritual warfare and I know you're attacked when God gives you something. Yeah. But also we have all had to put some things, some work things aside this mm-hmm. week. Mm-hmm. To deal with some family things.
Yeah.
And other situations that have come up. And I think like I beat myself up about that. So I think I needed to hear what you just said. Yeah. I don't know if anybody else did.
100%.
Yeah. 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 You know, I thought about it. We did this Christmas, I don't know the name of it, Christmas worship thing with our church. And again, I said I go to a large church. We have a couple different campuses. And so this was like a church-wide thing. And I'm such a good pastor's wife. I don't remember what it was called or anything. But I run in, you know, I'm coming from work. I am a few minutes late. I have a friend save me a seat. I sit down. And during the thing, I watch this young mom who her husband was on stage. So her husband's a part of worship and he was on stage. And she was just, it was a thing where all ages are welcome. Like kids were in the room, which I have feelings about, whatever. But, there she was, her husband's on stage. She's wrangling two very small children. Maybe she loved it. Maybe she enjoyed it. I don't want to put my feelings on. That would make me very, very anxious. That was very hard for me when my kids were younger, is to be in charge of them while Aaron was on stage.
Because I'm literally the same exact, like the Christmas service comes along and I'm like, hey, babe, I need you to be able to be with me in the service for one, just for one service with the kids, because them both having a candle in their hand.
Yeah.
And me being in charge of that. Plus I want to try to capture the moment with my camera. Like that makes me anxious.
It's a lot. Yeah. So I watched this young mom and I just had these like feelings of like, man, I want women, specifically pastors' wives, ministry leaders' wives. Like I want to give you the freedom to say, I can't go tonight. I can't do this. And it's not like I want women to be strong and I want us to be capable. Like I'm a very strong woman. I'm very capable. And at the same time, I want a woman to feel like I'm strong and I'm capable. I just don't think I can do this tonight.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And to be okay about it. And I just, maybe she had the time of her life. Maybe she loved it, you know? And on the flip side, I was like, man, what if we had like young college kids who are like, hey, I'm going to be your partner at every single event that your husband's on stage. I'm going to be with you and your kids.
Yeah.
That would be amazing, you know? Amen. And so I just was like having feelings about what would it look like for her to have said to her husband, I can't come tonight. And for him to be like, it's totally okay. Yeah. You know what I mean? And I think we've put a lot of pressure on people on staff for if a wife stays home because she's got all four kids by herself. Yeah. And this is a Christmas program that her husband's going to be on stage the entire time. Mm-hmm. And everyone has candles and all this stuff. And she's not in like a miserable place. It's not I always want to say there's seasons when it's like, hey, this is what we do. Like we're strong, we're capable, we do this. And then there's times where you're like, I don't think I can do this. Yeah. And I want us to be like, it's okay.
Yes.
Yeah, you know what I mean? It's okay.
Because a lot of the time it's the pastor's wife who puts the pressure on herself because she feels like she has to be all things to all people. And she's worried about what other people are going to say because she's not there.
Yeah. Exactly. Which so, I'll go back to my original analogy. At the Dell Christmas party, no one's wondering where the VP's wife is if she's home with the kids.
You are so right. Exactly. I love that analogy. We might use it at our retreats and everything because it is. That's the thing. Like I remember probably was it a year ago that I posted that I was just so drained and so tired. I think I had just got back from Africa.
Yeah, and
like
you didn't go to
church. I was not feeling super great. And I was like, you know what? I'm just skipping today. Like I'm just not going. And I remember just posting a picture on our stories and like it blew up. Like
I can't tell you how many messages we got from women.
And they were like, wow, thank you for the freedom to feel like I can. Or a lot of them are like, there's no way I could do that. My husband would be mad. The church would be, you know, and it's just, which is
sad.
It's sad, but it also was, we were able to encourage and pray for them and everything. Yeah. But yeah, it is such a beautiful thing that we can give people permission. Like we shouldn't have to, but.
And it's, When you're living in that grace, because I keep feeling like I need to explain, and there are moments when you say, God, I don't have strength, to give me the strength and help me do this, and I'm going to show up and I'm going to do this. But when we're living in the grace of God, we also get to say, you know what? Give me the grace to stay home today and drink coffee in bed.
Yeah.
Because you know what? I just need a day.
Yeah.
And you know, like,
you need an actual Sabbath.
You know, and so maybe if you're doing that, you know, 30 Sundays out of the year, we might need to have a conversation just about what does it look like for you to value community and church.
Yeah.
But I mean, otherwise, I'm just like, yeah, the grace. And you nailed it on the head, Jessica, when you said a lot of women said their husbands would be upset with them. Mm-hmm. And I think that is probably the bigger conversation that needs to happen, is that there is an unspoken rule.
Yes.
Yeah. And maybe we don't all get the same memo about the rule, or the memo is kind of unclear. Mm-hmm. And so we're all just trying to figure out what this memo is, and nobody knows.
Yes. Right.
And that's a hard place to live.
It is a hard place, but day by day, we're trying to encourage women and just men. I mean, because we have a lot of pastors and church people as well. So that's,
they reach out to us. Told my wife about your podcast. Thank you for being so encouraging. And so thankfully there are some good men out there. We are married to some of those.
Yes,
I mean, I actually had to skip youth group and everything this past Wednesday. We had some things we were dealing with at the house. And I was like, I looked at my husband. I said, I can't go. Yeah. I can't. He said, it's fine.
Yeah.
Don't.
Yeah.
You're good.
Yeah.
So, I mean, like, to be able to have a good man,
praise him,
who understands these things, in a good church who doesn't guilt you when you're not there.
Right. That's the biggest thing. So. Yeah, for sure. Hey, friend, we will get right back to our episode, but we want to take a moment and thank our patrons. You guys keep our podcast going.
If you are not a patron and you would like to consider donating to our podcast ministry, we would be so grateful. And we might even do a happy dance.
When you become a patron, you get perks like being the first to hear about special info and retreats. You get bonus episodes, monthly devotionals, lock screens, and more.
Plus, we have added a new $1 tier for those who believe in us and what we're doing, just because you love us.
So head on over to our show notes and click on the Patreon link to learn more. Now let's get back to our episode.
Okay, so Jamie, we are so excited about your new book that is coming out this February. Why Can't I Get It Together? Oh, let's just take a sigh. Oh, and look how Why can't I?
I feel like I say that to myself in my head every day, multiple times a day.
Oh, same.
Clearly, that's why Jamie wrote the book. She has been saying it for a while. We want to hear all about why you felt called to write this book, but also a lot of ministry leaders, men and women, are listening to this. Why is this a good book for ministry leaders and church leaders as well? So kind of throw that in there as you kind of share about this book.
Well, I say the same thing, Jenna, to myself all the time of Jamie. Usually it goes like, Jamie, get yourself together. And it's usually, you know, I'm doing the same thing. I'm thinking the same thing. I'm struggling with the same thing. Sometimes it's silly things like, for example, I have this is so dumb, but I have this red notebook that I write all my to-do list down every single day. And I left it at home. And so this morning I'm like, Jamie, get yourself together. Small thing, or it could be a big thing of like a sin I've been struggling with. Mm-hmm. And there it is again. And I'm like, Jamie, come on. Are we ever going to get past this? Mm-hmm. And so I say it to myself a lot. And I started wondering, what am I trying to do? Like, what am I trying to get together? What am I trying to overcome? What am I trying to beat? And I really started thinking about it, and I came up with these six different areas of our life. And I think that it doesn't matter how old you are, your gender, what you do in life, these six areas that I think really affect us as people. There are past and present hurts, so maybe we're not dealing with some things that we have in the past, or obligations, the things that we, you know, think we should do, the things we're obligated to, our needs, taking care of our body, our desires, what do we want, what are we dreaming about, expectations that we put on ourselves. We talk about this a lot already. Expectations that other people put on ourselves, responsibilities, things I have to do, like those glass balls, the things I can't get out of, like these are my responsibilities. And when I look at these areas, I think they change all the time. I've said this 100 times about my life has changed so much with what I need to do based on my kids and my work and Aaron's work. And so if you look at these areas, they change so much. And I think as ministry leaders, we often are saying, I need to present a good front to the world. And I think we do this for a lot of reasons. I mean, Stephanie, you alluded to it a little bit about like vulnerability and talking about it, is that I think we present, like, we need to present a good front to the world maybe because we think I'm who they're looking at to tell them about Jesus. And so don't I want them to think that he's like done good things in my life? And don't I want them to think that following him is quote unquote easy? Maybe we're in ministry and we think, man, if I'm going to lead people to the Lord, I need to look like I got myself together. Or maybe just as a mom, you know, you're feeling this way or whatever industry. And I think we just struggle with what am I putting out for people to see? And what I've found is when I look at these different areas of my life and I think, man, when I feel like I can't get myself together in them, what's off? You know, maybe what's off in my expectations is that I'm trying to live up to expectations that I didn't even know I should be living up to. We talk about that little memo that all the pastor's wives didn't get. Well, those are expectations, you know? And I think we put them on ourselves when we do that. Or maybe I have desires. Are they from the Lord? Like if you're dreaming up something big, like, is this from the Lord? What does this look like? I imagine you guys walk through this when you're dreaming up this podcast. You know, we have this desire to do this. And then God just opened doors. And what does it look like to trust God with those doors? Like that kind of thing. I think a lot of us, I mean, this is very true. We have things that we haven't dealt with inside of our, whether that's from our family of origin, maybe it's from some ways we got hurt in high school, college. Maybe there's things within our marriage that happened early on that we've just kind of put under the rug. And I think those things are going to come out one way or the other. And so, you know, I remember there was a season where I was just like, am I ever going to get over this thing? Fill in the blank. And so, I mean, I think the answer to all of these things is something bigger than ourselves. And it's how do we chase holiness? How do we desire to look and act and be and talk more like Jesus? And when I'm chasing holiness, I can kind of let some of these expectations roll off of me because that's not where my focus is. That's not where my eye is. You know, when I'm chasing holiness, I can say, there's a lot of things people are telling me I should do. I'm going to do the things that I need to do for my family and for me and for the Lord. And so I think it's just a book about things that you and I and most people in the world are thinking about of how can I not get myself together? And it's full of hope. I mean, I'm a very hopeful person and I know that there's something better for us. And listen, the truth is I wrote this book. I put every word in here. I studied all the things. I still say this to myself. So I don't think it's a matter of like, hey, I have all the answers to where we won't feel like we can't get together anymore.
Right.
Because life is hard and life throws us curveballs. And I don't know what tomorrow holds for me or you or any of us. But I do truly believe that when we're looking at our reality, our life through the right lens, we can feel put together, even if life is telling us we're not.
Yes. Man, and all of these expectations that we put on ourselves or that other people put on us, whoever we are, but especially as ministry leaders and church people, it just breeds fake people, like I said before. And I think that's the problem. We're seeing this uptick in narcissistic pastors and just horrible people. And I think, like, what have we done wrong as the church? But I think we have told leaders that you don't actually confess your sin one to another. Yeah, you do that. You do that behind closed doors, but you know, you could cause someone to stumble if they see that you've messed up. But confession is for all of us. And the Bible says to confess one to another. And if we're not doing that, that's a problem. But these unrealistic expectations, I think, lead to this. So can we talk more specifically? Can you share with us, like, what are some of these unrealistic expectations you think that we have put on ourselves as leaders in the church, but also just women in general? And then what have you done? Like, what expectations were you living in that have caused a lot of the questions that you've had in your personal life?
Yeah, I think as far as like church leadership and specifically pastor's wives, there's a lot of expectations that you are Bible scholars, that you have the gift of hospitality, that you want to have children. There's a hot take that you, all kinds of things that we're, that you're going to be at everything. You're going to be all things to all people for everyone. And so I think those are expectations that have been put on wives of people in ministry. And the thing is, none of those are bad. They're all amazing things. And I think they're all things that like some people would fit into. But it's not everyone's gift. It's not everyone's thing, you know? And so we're asking people to be something they aren't. And what it does is it causes, it can potentially for sure cause dissension in marriages, you know? Because if you're, let's just say, for example, if you're a pastor at a church and maybe you're not the head pastor, but you're in leadership, there's probably some tension of like, is my wife doing everything she needs to do for us to be a team here? And I just think that, like, without conversations between the spouses, without conversations between the leadership, that can really lead to a lot of unnecessary expectations and hurt on people that they don't even know. I mean, you see, I'm sure you guys hear this a lot, of women just feeling like, I didn't sign up for this. This is not what I thought was going to happen. And that makes me really, really sad. And it also makes me feel like, man, the conversations between husband and wife, I just don't think have been happening. If all of a sudden they're at a place where one of them feels like they're succeeding and the other one feels like they're being dragged along. And that's a scary place to be. And I think it is a lack of conversation between a husband and a wife of what that feels like. I think, you know, an expectation that a wife would just want to do everything and be on board about everything. And I think what happens there is, I'm putting a lot of generalizations here so everyone understand that. I think that would be a lot of like husbands making all the decisions. Here's what we're going to do. Here's what's going to happen without consulting a wife. And I don't think that's a very good way to lead a family, you know? And so I think it leads to a lot of burnout on people's parts. I think it leads to a lot of women feeling unseen, unheard. And then they start to feel like, I'm just here to be a little puppet for you. I'm just here to look good standing next to you. And that's a deeper conversation because that's not how God designed marriage to be.
Right.
You know?
Well, I think that like also, I think one of the things that we preach so much is that the church has put our husbands and ministry leaders on a pulpit and on a stand that they were never meant to be on. We put them higher than anything, and the only person should be Jesus. And so we've put them so high that they feel like they are invincible and no one can hold them accountable. And then they take that same mentality home and they begin to speak over their wives and their children and the relationships that they have. That's what it rolls into in the home life, which is just so sad, you know?
It's very, very sad. And we see it a lot. You mentioned, you know, narcissistic leaders, and it feels like it's on an uprise. And I do think it's because we have elevated people to a place they were never meant to be. And
absolutely.
Again, I am all for leadership. I am all for, I'm a good follower. Like I want to follow someone that I trust, and I'm all for that. But when someone becomes invincible and when someone becomes, they can't be held accountable for stuff, I think that's a problem. Another thing is, I'm like, man, we've got a lot of church leaders that I think they should just go work someplace else. Like, I mean, that's a hot, I'm just like, stop doing ministry. Like, I don't know what you're doing. Go find another job. There's a lot of jobs available, you know? And if you don't feel as though you are called to be in ministry, and if you don't, and if you feel as though there's things in your life that are prohibiting you from living a life that is worthy of being a leader, go be, go work someplace else. I bet your wife will be happy. You know, like just leave. Like that's true. I'm just like, guys, go. Like we don't need unhealthy leaders in the church. And so, maybe you just need a change of job.
Completely agree.
Oh my goodness. We feel you. we talk about these things all the time. I'm like, wow. We even have a group for pastors' wives and ministry, female ministry leaders. And it is so, so heartbreaking to see some of these anonymous posts that they'll ask to put in there. Just the abuse, the mental, emotional, and sometimes even physical, and women feeling trapped and feeling like, my husband doesn't need to be a pastor, but I don't know what to do. And no one would believe me if I told them what happens at home. Like they're stuck, and we've had to get them in contact with people who could possibly help them or call authorities and things, just because we're like, oh my gosh, we got to get these women to safety. Like this is not okay. It's just not okay.
It's so sad.
It comes a lot, from, you know, something that you mentioned, Jessica, of like this leadership from home that's coming into the, I mean, leadership at church is coming into the home. And I think that we have done, oh, this is going to turn into too long of a conversation and I might get canceled, but.
We've already been canceled a few times. It's okay.
I love it. I think this idea of men in leadership is something I ascribe to. Like I see as though Aaron is the head of our house in lots of ways. I think he's gonna be accountable to the Lord on things. But that doesn't equal that Aaron tells me what to do and that he makes all the decisions and that he's in charge. Mm. That is so far from the truth.
Right. Right.
Like we are a team. We mm-hmm. co-submit to each other. Like we submit to one another in love, just like Ephesians 5 says.
Yes.
And I think that there has been a disservice. I don't know where it's happening. I don't know if it's happening in churches when these boys are little. I don't know if it's happening in seminary. I don't know where it's happening. But someone is telling them that you are in charge of everybody around you no matter what, end of story. Mm-hmm. And that is detrimental to women. Mm-hmm. It is.
Absolutely. It's preached from the pulpits where I grew up. It was preached.
It just gave me chills because this is how women are in abusive situations.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
When men feel as though I am the head of everybody around me, no matter what.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And it's evil. It's bad. Yeah. It's wrong. And it is not the way that Christ set up his church. It is not the way that God asked us to treat one another. If we just take out marriage, don't even talk about marriage. Talk about how do we treat one another?
Exactly.
Mm. I mean, let's just look at that in scripture. Exactly. And you're failing. That is not how we treat people. Yeah. And so I just feel really sad for those women. And what I'm feeling when you're saying that, Stephanie, is I feel really grateful that they have a place where they can say it out loud because I would imagine they've never told anyone. And then they tell you guys in this anonymous post you're probably, although you can't provide a solution, you don't live in their church, you don't go to their church, you don't live next door to them. Just for them to say it out loud is probably the first thing they've ever done.
Yeah.
And so I'm grateful for you guys.
Some of them have said that. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. That's where retreats really come in and we're able to like do one-on-one and just hang out with them. And that's where they find freedom. But
how do you guys not want to write a letter to every single church you find out about and just be like, hey, I need to tell you guys something. I got something to say.
Hard. It's so hard.
There's so many. Yeah. That's the problem too. We'd be sitting here all day. Thousands, like, I feel like there's another one, guys. There's another one. Like I feel heavy all the time doing this. I'm like, God, I know you've called us to do this, but it feels really hard and heavy and dark.
Yeah.
Sometimes when I look at those messages or I get in that group, I'm like, oh my gosh.
Yeah.
And I think we should just be clear. This happens in every industry. Take my example. And there are men who are abusing their wives at Dell.
Yes.
And so it is wrong no matter what. I think from all of us sitting here who are leaders in the church, it's even more disgusting for us.
Yeah.
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 Absolutely.
Okay. On that note, we're going to shift gears just a little bit.
We went on a rabbit trail.
We could go down that rabbit trail for quite some time.
Yeah.
So let's talk a little bit about perfectionism versus holiness. So how do you think the pursuit of perfectionism church leaders cling to keep us trapped in a cycle of bad habits? Mm-hmm. So how does the pursuit of perfectionism differ from the pursuit of holiness?
Yeah.
Because a lot of people... I can raise my hand and say, like, I struggle with perfectionism. I'm an Enneagram one. I feel like there's a right way to do everything. You know, I've dealt with the mask. You know, I want to be, you know, perceived this way or what. Like, that's all something that I have to lay down, the pride of that. Like, I have to lay that down daily. So tell us what you think about that.
Well, I want to start with this quote that Aaron actually preached yesterday in our church about Simeon. And, who was waiting for Jesus to be born. And it's so funny.
Wait, can I just say that's what Jonathan preached on yesterday?
Oh, that's
my husband. Very interested to hear what your fizz and talk about.
Well, I bet you didn't say the same thing I said to Aaron. Like last week, I was like, oh, I see that you're preaching this week because we share a calendar. Like I was like, oh, I see that you're preaching this week. What are you preaching on? And he said, Simeon. And I literally, y'all, I have been a Christian for 22 years. I've been married to a pastor for however many years. I'm in seminary. I literally said, well, who's Simeon?
Okay. Well, now that you say that, I'll just admit that when you just said Simeon, I was like, am I supposed to know who that is?
Listen. I literally... He is very prominent in Luke 2. So just read Luke 2 when we're done, and there he is. But we just kind of gloss over him. But that was kind of the point of Aaron's sermon, was like, we forget about Simeon a lot. But anyhow, I now know fully who Simeon is. And I've got 5 points.
Well, go ahead and tell me. Tell me right now.
God, the Holy Spirit had told Simeon that he would not die until he saw the Messiah. And so, was he a priest? Jessica, was he a priest at the tabernacle? He was something important.
No,
look at us.
Yeah, I don't know if he was a priest. I'm going to go ahead and let you know that one.
Okay, so he was important, and he would have seen all of the babies who were coming in to be quote-unquote dedicated, like we would say today. But and through the Holy Spirit, he knew that it was the Messiah, picked him up, sang a song to Mary and Joseph. There we go. Okay. But Aaron yesterday talked about zeal, and it's something that Simeon was described as having. And he said, zeal in Christianity is a burning desire to please God. This is by J.C. Ryle. This is not Aaron Ivey. Okay. So J.C. Zeal in Christianity is a burning desire to please God. A zealous person in Christianity is preeminently a person of one thing. They only see one thing. They care for one thing. They live for one thing. They are swallowed up in one thing. And that one thing is to please God. Mm-hmm. And I think when I think about your question, Jenna, and I think about perfectionism, usually perfectionism, the one thing that we're striving to do is to look a certain way. And mm-hmm. so it's really perfectionism. I would go out on a limb and say it's not bred out of I want to please God. It's bred out of I need to just do everything right, maybe so God will be pleased with me. Mm-hmm. Or I need to do everything right so that my husband, my kids, the other moms at the school, the church members, my neighbors, whatever, will be pleased with me. Mm-hmm. So perfectionism usually is like, I need people to be pleased with me. I need your affirmation. I need you to see that I'm doing everything right. Whereas I think holiness, and in this quote from J.C. Ryle about zeal, is really like we're yearning for one thing, and that is to please the Lord. Mm-hmm. And that's what I think of when I think of striving for holiness, is like, yeah. what does it look like to strive to be more like Jesus? And usually I don't really lean towards perfectionism. So, you know, I'm kind of like whatever. But usually someone who's leaning towards that is really their main goal is to look a certain way so that they can receive love, admiration, attention, whatever it would be. Mm-hmm. Whereas all of us, whether we struggle with perfection, all of us have the Holy Spirit. All of us have this inside of us, and we have the scriptures, and like our goal, sanctification, is like, how do we look more like Jesus every day? Mm-hmm. The struggle is that we're humans, and one of the best things we do in life is sin. And so that's like something against us, is like, we'll be fighting yeah. this until the day we die. But this sanctification journey is like, I'm going to lay down myself to be sanctified, to be purified, to look mm-hmm. more like you. For the perfectionist, man, that's hard, because sometimes the journey towards looking more like Jesus is rocky. It mm-hmm. is rough. It seems like you're going downhill. You're definitely in some valleys. You know, mm-hmm. you probably have some suffering. You probably have some things that didn't go the way you planned. And I think laying down those things to the Lord is so hard for all mm-hmm. of us. Really hard for people who are yearning for people to think they have it all together.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. It's good.
And yeah. so I love that zeal quote yesterday.
Yeah,
I
asked him that last was
night.
Really good.
Yeah, I asked him last night to send it to me. I didn't know I was going to use it today. That was good.
There you go.
I learned about Simeon.
Oh, my goodness. Hilarious. Well, I think like it's so hard. I think just to go back to your book, I think this is such a beautiful time for your book to come out with the people striving is so huge. Yeah. And I think the thing is we've taken holiness out of even the church. Mm. We've taken holiness out of even the things that we teach and preach on because we're trying to appease our members. We're trying to look a certain way or I just think that social media and so much about our lives, we are comparing and wanting this perfect thing. Mm-hmm. And so I think like with your book coming out and the striving for perfection is happening everywhere in some yeah. way, shape or form, even yeah. if you're not a perfectionist,
yeah.
but to strive for holiness, the one thing that God wants you to strive for, because yeah. the striving, we're going to do that. If we continue just to strive to be better and better, we're just spinning our wheels. But to strive for holiness, that means to like keep our eyes focused on Jesus and not look to the right or to the yep. left. Yep. But what's happening is we're looking to the right and to the left, and we're wanting to look like other people. We're wanting to be something that we're not or be that person that everybody else loves. Yeah. And so I think like for your book coming out in February, what is the one thing, I mean, I know there's a lot of things, but what's the one thing for our listeners to hear? What do you want them to get from this book? Like you and Jesus in your quiet time, like what is the one thing that y'all want to get out to the world during this season?
I think one of the things I want people to know is that there is no like answer to getting it all together. Like this isn't a book about how to get your calendar organized better or how to make, you know, better friends or, and those are all great things. Lord, I need them all. But it's more a book about acknowledging the areas that are hard. And so within the book, I ask you a lot to like kind of write down like, where is this, where's your struggle in this area? And so acknowledging them and then literally looking for a better way to feel like you have it together. And I end, man, I can't help but talking about in every book I ever write about community. And I just cannot express how important that is. We already talked about it a lot here of just how when you're living life with struggles that no one knows about, you will always feel out of control. Mm-hmm. Always. Mm-hmm. You will never feel in control because it's a constant spiral. And if no one knows about it. And so I know a lot of your listeners, like we talked about this, that they feel like they can't tell anyone these struggles. And man, I want to say to them, you can. And I'm fully aware they probably have and have been burned by that. And so there are a lot of churches who do not promote healthy confession, especially for leaders. And so I first want to say I'm sorry. And then second, man, the fact that you guys told me before we started that you guys all work, or your husbands all work at different churches, and you guys have this community. One of the hardest things for me has been finding people to confess to who my husband doesn't lead, either their spouse or their spouse wife. You know what I mean? Some of my best friends, their husbands also work for the church. And so that's been a struggle for me. But man, look for people maybe outside of your intimate community that you can talk to. So man, just like, you can't get it all together. We're always going to have struggles. But there is something better on the other side. And I think community has a lot to do with that.
So good.
Thank you.
So
good. Okay. I hate that we're kind of getting close to the end here, but can you just go ahead and tell people where they can find you, where they can purchase your book, just all the important stuff that I know people are just dying to know right now.
I love it so much. Well, I love Instagram. It's my favorite social media. I should say love hate, you know, but I'm over there at Jamie Ivy, and here's my little Instagram rant. Are you ready? You didn't ask, but I'm going to give it to you.
Ready. Go for it. Please.
I just want everyone to remember, as you're looking at people's, like if you're new and you come over to my page and you'd be like, man, Jamie has it all together. No, I don't. Okay. Because I want everyone to remember that Instagram is a curated page of what people want you to see.
100%.
Yeah. Okay. So I don't think Instagram's a lie. Everything you see on my page is true. There's just a million things that you don't know about my life because they're not the world's business. So I just always have to remind people that. But I love hanging out on Instagram. And then if you go to jamieivy.com/read, all the books are there, and especially this one.
Cool.
Yes.
Cool.
And I love this cover.
I'm
excited to read the book.
It is so pretty.
It's so cute.
I love it.
All right, Jamie. So our time has come to an end, but everybody who listens knows that we ask our guest 3 final questions every time they are interviewed. So are you ready?
I am.
Okay. So question number 1, if you could go back and give your pre-pastor's wife, ministry leader self, one piece of advice, what would it be?
Wear whatever you want.
Yes.
Nobody's ever given that answer before.
But
so
it's
congratulations.
Such a good one.
It's so
thank
good.
You. Thank we you. Wear whatever that. You want.
Yes.
Yep.
There you go.
I needed that at 20 when we started.
Me too.
Okay. Number 2, what do you do for fun? By yourself, but also what do you do with your hubby just to get your mind off of all the things going on?
What do I do for fun by myself? I don't know that I do anything. Aaron and I love to go out to eat. We love to go. We're a movie going family. We love to go to the movies.
I love movies too.
I know. I went by myself the other day.
You did do something by yourself.
I'm so proud of yourself. I've never done that. And
I haven't either.
Middle of the day, I went by myself. Thank you.
That's amazing.
Great. Got myself a popcorn. They only sell one size, so I had to get the largest size.
There you go.
And got myself a Diet Coke and just enjoyed it.
It's amazing.
I'm going to do that more in 2024. There's a movie theater by us that you can buy a pass for like $25 and you can see a movie a day. And
what?
I think Aaron and I are both going to buy it and we'll go together sometimes, but we love movies. And so I can imagine, I'll be like, you guys, I got 4 hours. I'm going to go see a movie.
That's amazing.
I love that.
We could hang out because I love a movie.
Me too.
With
lots of
but
butter on the popcorn.
We don't have a theater that has that.
That's incredible.
Yeah.
Go your theater.
I know.
I'm not sure. Let's take some fine
pointers.
$50.
All right. Final question. And this is always a big one. And sometimes people are like, I don't know if I can say what I'm really thinking. Yes, we want you to say what you're really thinking. If you could tell the church congregation one thing without reservation and have them really listen and respond, what would you say?
We've talked a lot about ministry leaders, so I'm going to not go there. I think what I'm going to say to the church congregation, if they could really listen, is to say church is not a social activity. Mm. I think we got a lot of people in America who think, well, I'm a Christian because I go to church and I grew up in a Christian family and we're a Christian nation. And none of those things are actually true or make you a Christian. And so I think I would tell the congregation, there's a lot on the line here. And if you're not bought in, go to brunch on Sunday. I think it's dumb that you go to church. Like, go to brunch, you know, like, and I'm not talking to those people who are seeking and trying to find God. I'm talking to those people who are like, yeah, I'm a Christian, except I don't actually even know what the Bible says about anything. Yeah. Like, I'm just saying, like,
yeah,
like, give your life away to something.
Yeah.
Be all in. That's what I would say. That's
no, we so especially good. Need to hear that down here where there's like so many churches, like a church on every corner. And you have a bunch of like fans of Jesus, which I'm reading this book right now with our small group, Not a Fan.
Who wrote it?
I think it's Kyle Eidelman. Is that his name?
John. That is a person.
Yeah. Okay. It's him then. I'm like trying to think, but it has been so good in talking about the difference between like a fan and a follower.
Yeah. Oh yeah. Andy Andrew has a book called Fake or Follower. Refusing to Settle for a Shallow Faith. Yeah.
That sounds good. That sounds amazing.
Yeah. You have to look into that one.
Sounds like
love it.
What all of our churches need to listen to. Oh, yeah. And even us. I mean,
me too.
Same. Heavens, we struggle every single day.
Oh, 100%.
Well, Jamie, we have just had so much fun with you and, I just feel like this was chock full of just good conversation, just a lot of Jesus.
So
and
good.
Yeah. And just things that people need to talk about and know that it's okay to talk about it. Yeah.
Absolutely.
And even come with different opinions and everything, but to come together to the table and know that we all are going the same direction. Mm-hmm. We should be going the same direction with a unified church. So thank you, Jamie. We're so excited about your book. We cannot wait to read it. Comes out February. What's
13th?
February 13th.
February 13th. The day before Valentine's Day.
Yes.
A little bit of love in your heart.
Buy yourself a gift, ladies. Yes. Buy yourself a gift.
And buy all your friends' gifts. And your husband. Everybody, go do it right now.
Right now. And until Thursday, when we're going to spill the tea with Jamie.
Until next time.
Bye.
Okay, friends, if you have enjoyed this episode as much as we have, please help us spread the word on Facebook and Instagram.
If you didn't know yet, Instagram is where all the fun is at. From dance reels on Wednesdays to spiritual encouragement and laugh out loud posts in between, there is something for everyone.
And last but certainly not least, if you could take a moment right now to stop what you're doing and give us a rating and review, even subscribe to our podcast, this seriously helps other people find us who wouldn't be able to otherwise. Thank you so much for your love and support. We hope you'll tune in next week.